Thank you. I sort of feel like the odd man out here because I'm not going to talk about the impact of cost of fertilizers on changing nitrogen rates or in changing management practices. One of the things that North Carolina farmers enjoy is a very warm, long growing season. That allows them to grow multiple crops, anything from sweet potatoes to cotton to soybeans to peanuts, what have you. So therefore, oftentimes when we're faced with increasing costs or decreasing prices in a commodity, the question really for that grower is, am I going to plant that? And how many acres am I going to plant? And we're going to look at that decision here today. You know, just like a lot of farmers across the country, North Carolina corn growers like to plant corn, and there are several reasons for this. First of all, there's strong demand for corn in the southeast. We're a grain deficit area, a lot of swine and poultry operations. We can use corn, and the market pays for that with a lower positive basis. Second of all, we have the available equipment, I think I can show that, available equipment and crop management techniques, particularly as we've seen the advent of BT corn and stress tolerance in corn. We can get away with growing corn in places in North Carolina we never thought we could before. In fact, we've had 200 bushel corn yields in every county in the state in the last 5 years. Last of all, it's an excellent fit for our rotation. Certainly cotton and soybean, which dominate the landscape in agriculture in North Carolina, corn is a great fit for those kinds of cropping systems. However, this is the reason why corn is not the preferred crop. And I'm going to draw your attention to several things here. And this is obviously a graph of increasing corn yields across years. And if we look at just the red line, it says that we're increasing yield about 2 to 3 bushels per year in corn production in the state. But if we, and particularly in the last 7 to 9 years since 2000, since the advent of BT and seed insecticides, we've seen that advantage in that. What we've also seen, though, is an extreme amount of variability in corn yields. We'll have yields with an extremely good situation in the state like we had in 2006-07 and 2007, and the disastrous years like we've had in 2008. Drought is not the only thing that can hurt us. We can have hurricanes and tropical storms that can make just as big an impact and disastrous impact on our grain yield. Couple that variability in yield with increasing costs, and you've seen these graphs now about 3 or 4 times here today, but not just increasing costs in fertilizers, but also increasing costs in seed costs, and you see the North Carolina corn growers face extreme risk when they come to the decision to plant corn on our soils out there. With the kind of investment that they're making, they need to know, have I got the opportunity to make money? So that's the thing. Whoops, I need to back up here. So that's the thing. Now you go back and forth on this. That's the thing they need to know is how much can I afford to take the risk in growing corn in a given year. There are several factors that they need to consider. First of all, the rising cost of production. Certainly as production costs go up, that increase the amount of risk that they take because they've got a lot more money leveraged in that decision. Second of all, they'd like to know a little bit about whether there's a potential for getting good yield. It's not just about avoiding risk, but it's also about taking the opportunity to get good incomes, which we have had in the corn production game in the southeast. So I'd like to know whether or not we have the potential. Unfortunately, weather forecasts are not good enough yet to tell us whether we're going to have an ideal season or not in the state. Last of all, is the price high enough to justify that risk? And this is really the question that comes to their mind. Are we going to get enough price incentive by the time we harvest that crop sometime through that season to allow me to sell corn and cover that amount of risk? Well, certainly as we look at prices over the last several years, there's been opportunity to take a lot of risk in this corn market, even in the advance of rising costs. But there's also been a lot of risk, particularly lately here, as we consider decreasing costs here, or decreasing prices we've seen since the downfall in the October of 2008. So certainly we've got the opportunity if we knew what that price was that that grower should accept or look for to cover his risk. And that's what we're going to look at here with some of this information that we're developing for growers in North Carolina. Now, our traditional method of looking at what price the grower needs to have in order to make that decision whether or not to plant the crop is actually to take a look at the budget, you know, to look at the costs involved in planting the crop. That's what we see here with the Tidewater region of North Carolina. Look at the costs involved, and then go down and take a look at break-even. How much do we have to have in order to cover our variable or total costs as far as the price? And basically what we're doing is taking our average yield here and looking at how much price we have to do to cover average yield. Now, that's all fine and good in that it gives us some idea about what price we need to shoot for, but it doesn't give us an idea about how much risk we can cover. A better method here would actually be to look at the ranges between our highest yield and the price we would need to cover our costs at the highest yield versus the price we would need at the lowest yield. That at least gives us a range of values. But even here, we tend to underestimate the risk here, overestimate the risk here. By far and away, a better strategy to evaluate risk is to look at the whole range of outcomes that a corn grower might have and then evaluate risk based on that. And fortunately, we have a technique for doing that. Stochastic dominance was developed back in the 70s by economics professors, and it has the in that we can evaluate risk by considering a range of outcomes here. Now, in its simplest form, first-degree stochastic dominance, that says that one distribution, say this blue distribution representing 550 corn, dominates every point in a second distribution. So in this case, 550 corn would certainly be dominant strategy for either 375 or $2 corn. But in first degree, 375 would not dominate $2 corn. So you can see it gives us some discriminatory value, but has a lot to be desired as we try to pick out where that strike price is for corn growers. Second-degree stochastic dominance is a little more discerning in that it takes into account the risky strategies or these bottom outcomes here in corn production in a given region. However, even that strategy has some limited value. What we would really like to do is be able to evaluate different distributions based on the risk strategy of the producer. Fortunately, Meyer in 77 came up with some strategies for doing that. Basically, by developing a risk aversion function, he was able to identify the risk areas for each producer. In this case, a risk taker is interested in opportunity. He's got all of his costs covered. He's looking for opportunity, so he's looking for the upper range of possible outcomes from that corn event. Versus a risk-neutral grower who's interested in the median outcomes. A risk-averse grower certainly is interested in what potential bad things might happen here toward the tail of the distribution. And then you've got the very, very risk who's highly leveraged, who's only concerned about how bad can it get. How bad is that weather going to treat me? And what price do I have to take that risk there? Now, we can use this kind of a comparison to identify grower risk attitudes and then identify what that strike price or what the corn price needs to be for that grower to risk growing corn in that area of North Carolina. We can also take one other aspect to this that I think is quite interesting. Growers don't have the same risk attitude toward every field on their farm. On their good, productive soils, they may be risk takers. They may say, I'm looking for opportunity to plant the best crop that I can get the best return from. On their marginal soils, they may be risk averse or even very risk averse. So in a way, this not only gives us a way to identify the growers and when they got an opportunity to plant corn, but how many acres on their farm they should plant based on productivity levels of that land. So we can answer the two questions that we sought out looking for. Should I plant corn? How much of my farm should I devote to that crop? So let's take a look at some case studies here from North Carolina that I think are instructing this tool that we're using to talk to growers this fall and winter about how much corn should they be planting in the state, where should they be targeted corn acres. Let's look at three situations: Scotland and the coastal plain and the Sandhills region. So as the name implies, a very sandy area of the state. The better soils in that area are the Duplin and Dunbar soils. Then we have moderate productive soils, Goldsboro, Lynchburg, then finally Coxville, and even a Blaney sand, which is practically a pure sand. Jones County, also in the coastal plain, however, doesn't have as much sandy soils. We've got some Carolina bays in that region that have some organic mixes to it. So therefore, we have some soils in the Pantego series that have some high productivity. Again, Goldsboro and Lynchburg, just as we do in Scotland County, and then Craven and Norfolk being the lower productive soils in that region. Finally, we're going to look at Hyde County. That's a highly organic soils in the eastern part of the state. Whoops. In the eastern part of the state, primarily the most productive soils in this county are soils that have a lot of organic matter but are well drained, such as the Roper or Weeksville soil. The ponds are an urgent. Again, these are organic. We're talking 10%, 20% organic matter on a lot of these soils. High water holding capacity. So this is ideal corn production area. We got growers in this county who average 200 bushels per acre of corn year in and year out. And then finally, our worst soils are, again, a Bellhaven, a very deep organic, or a Craven. This gives you an idea what the yield distributions are for those counties. You can take a look here. Red represents Scotland. As you can see, we don't have as good a top-end yield potential in this area, but we certainly have a lot of risk as we look at what negative outcomes we can see over the last 15 years. Jones, we've got a little better soils, but again, enjoy some of that same risk. So looking here, we see that we've got a lot more variability even in Jones County than we do in Scotland. And then finally, Hyde County, as you can tell from the description of those soils, that we've got a lot more yield potential in that county. The other feature here is a lot less risk. So probably a lot more like some of the Midwestern soils are embodied in that Hyde County distribution of yields we see there. All right, in each of these cases, we're going to look at three different cost scenarios. The current costs, and when I talk about costs here, I refer primarily to fertilizer prices, nitrogen running about 31 cents a pound, P2O5 40 cents, and K2O 50, and then seed costs are the other factor here that has come into play. So I'm going to look at primarily changing these features here. There will be some change as we look at those costs on these interest on capital here. But as you can see here, we've got the current situation in fertilizer and seed, the five-year low in fertilizer and seed, and the five-year high in fertilizer and seed costs. So those are the three scenarios we're using. In the coastal plain, growers usually plant about 25,000 seeds per acre, 140 pounds of nitrogen to the acre, and 35 pounds P2O5 and 80 of K2O. So you can see here that represents the different conditions that we've seen in the coastal plain region over the last 5 years. So as a result, we got about $321 of variable and fixed costs involved in our current situation, $256 as the five-year low, and $457 per acre as the five-year high for both the Jones and the Scotland County situation. We're going to look at the same thing in Hyde County, again using the same current prices, five-year lows and five-year highs. These prices are all the same here. The differences, however, between these are that our herbicide costs are higher in the Tidewater region. We got organic soils. It's difficult to control weeds, so we're going to use more weed control there. Our machinery costs are higher. We're talking about 2,000 to 3,000 acre farms with larger equipment, so therefore machine costs are higher and fixed costs are going to be higher there. Again, the other thing that's going to change here in the Tidewater region in Hyde County is we got 30,000 seeds per acre as the typical planting density, 160 pounds of nitrogen, 60 pounds of P2O5. K2O stays about the same. So as we see here, that results in total fixed costs currently of about $403 or $4 to the acre. The five-year low would be $329, $30. And the five-year high would be $569. All right, let's take a look at how we're going to implement this thing. We're going to start by looking at different price scenarios. We're going to take a scenario, $1.50 price for corn all the way to $6.25 increments. And we're going to compare those distributions to a base distribution representing break-even costs. So basically, we're looking for a distribution of net returns based on those yields and those cost scenarios that gives us a dominant strategy compared to that baseline, break-even baseline for these different risk takers. So here's dollars. So as you can see here, as we look at each of these scenarios that we're comparing again to that baseline, you also see the impact of putting price to this. You notice that at the higher yields, that price has a larger impact than it does down at the lower yields. The result is the standardization of those distribution increases, variability increases. And of course, we're going to do this by considering the different risk factors and for these growers. Now, we're taking these risk numbers, this risk-averse function numbers from the document by Williams from Kansas State University that well describes the farmers in eastern North Carolina. Okay, let's take a look at the outcomes here, starting with Scotland County. Let's first of all just take a look at this box over here on the left-hand side of the screen here. And take a look as if we just took costs and calculated what the break-even price would be at average and highest and lowest yield here. At average yield, we'd need $3.65. At the highest yield we've got in the last 15 years in Scotland County, $2.61. And at the lowest, almost $11 to cover the input costs that we have at that lowest yield. We can see here if we now compare that to taking into account the risk strategies for those growers. As a risk taker, that's that red line there, he would need $3.50 to allow him to plant corn based on that cost and the distribution of yield outcomes at the upper range of this yield picture here. In other words, he's got to have enough to cover all of these outcomes here, not just the highest outcome that he has available to him. So it's going to take a little more money, and that's why I say the highest yield is often underestimating the risk involved in planting corn, certainly in this situation. For a risk-neutral grower, that's $3.75. We shouldn't be surprised that that's not much different from the average yield because you're considered the median or average area of that yield distribution, or that return distribution. The surprising thing here is how much it costs to entice the risk-averse grower into planting corn in Scotland County. It takes almost $6 corn because of this very strong negative outcome in order to bring this distribution far enough to make it feasible for that grower to consider planting corn in these situations. And for the very risk-averse, yeah, that outcome was higher than the last distribution that we tested. So you can see here a big jump between a risk-taker and risk-neutral, where they have at least some potential for return, and those risk-averse or very risk-averse. This also describes, as I said earlier, the acres in Scotland County that we might consider. For instance, here's the scenarios under each of the, there's the current cost one that I just described, there's the lowest cost scenarios, and here's the highest cost scenarios in both the terms of just looking at averages as well as taking into account the distributions of that data. But what's interesting here is to take a look at how many acres would be involved. If we consider just the Duplin or Dunbar soils that are tilled in Scotland County as being those that a grower might take a risk on planting corn, there's only 1,600 acres of those that would qualify as being prime corn land to be put in production when these strike prices were reached. If we consider even the risk-neutral strategy, we're only still talking about 17,000 or 18,000 acres in Scotland County that might be grown under price scenarios that are possible in today's market. Everything else in that county is really at a price scenario that's unrealistic given the today's price situation. So we can see now that there's a very limited opportunity for corn growers in Scotland County, only those with the very best soils. This is very true as well for Jones County. If we again take a look at what it takes, if we just figure what the average yield and what the strike price or break-even price would be for that, $340, at a highest yield, $229, and lowest, $1284, you can see again that our risk taker and our risk neutral position, again the red and the yellow line, would be considering planting corn whenever we got into prices in the 325 to 375 range. But again, we have a big drop-off because of the risk down here for those who are risk-averse or very risk-averse. Likewise, if we take a look at the acres that might be involved, again, there's the Pantego-type soils. Here we're talking about Goldsboro-Lynchburg soils in this county. Again, there's only about 19, 20,000 acres in Jones County that would potentially be plantable to corn given our current corn pricing situation. All the rest of it would need to have substantially higher prices to entice those farmers to take a risk on planting corn on those acres. Now compare that with the Hyde County situation. Again, remember that's a much higher yields, much tighter distribution in yields from high to low. And we could see that reflected not just in the average cost, which $294 breaks even on average in Hyde County. Highest yield will be $223 and the lowest $388. You can see here that the risk taker, the risk neutral, even the risk averse and very risk averse farmers would all have opportunities in today's corn market to plant corn in this county, and that reflects the higher yield potential of those soils and the fact that those yields are much less variable than we've seen in the other parts of the state. And we can see that reflected here. Even if we go up to the highest cost in the last 5 years, there certainly are some opportunities for the risk taker or risk neutral guy to take advantage of planting corn. Maybe the risk averse or very risk averse might have some problems if input costs rose back to the levels that we saw in mid-2008. So we can see here very quickly how we could take advantage of a knowledge about the risk that that grower has to help them to make that decision, not only about should they plant corn, but how many acres should they commit to that corn planting operation. Certainly, like in the Midwest, where the variability is lower, they've got an opportunity at much lower price to commit more acres. When variability is high, their opportunity, particularly on those poor areas of that farm, are going to be very limited to plant corn in the southeast. Let's take one last gaze at how we might use this tool, and that is, can we use it to describe decisions for going toward perhaps higher seeding rates or perhaps in using more nitrogen in a corn planting operation? We could see here that we've got two different responses here as we go to higher seeding rates in corn yield. In a timely rainfall situation, we're continuing to see yield increases in Hyde County as we go to higher seeding rates. But when we have droughts, we typically see this fall off in yield as we reach a certain point. And you've seen some of that same distribution or response data here today. We can use this information to adjust those distributions, and that's what you're looking at here. Here's the same distribution at corn at 30,000 seeds. Here's that distribution when corn goes to 43,000 seeds. We can see we've got an increase or an advantage because we got higher yield potential in those good years, but we can see there's some negative outcomes because when we go to 43,000, we drop off yield and we got higher costs, and that drives the tail of this distribution back toward a negative return. So as a result, how does that impact what strategies? Well, here's at 30,000 seeds. You can see it hasn't really changed our strategy for the risk taker. For the risk neutral guy, it starts to increase the price he has to have, but it's really for these risk-averse and very risk-averse farmers. They are going to face the decision of going to higher yields. They're going to have to take another thought or another examination of that, because it's going to increase their potential risk and therefore they may want to decide again about making that change in that strategy. So in conclusions, there is an opportunity to use this technique to make some decisions about going to other strategies, about how many acres to plant, even whether or not that grower wants to plant corn in the first place. I think if we look at individual farmers and look at their yield distributions, this becomes even more valuable because we can examine even higher. These are averages for these counties, but we know there are growers that have much tighter distributions because of their management practices versus growers who have distributions that range all the way, like I said, from 200 bushels to 20 bushels. So we can use that opportunity to examine their risk and tell them whether or not they should make that decision. With that, I'll certainly take some questions here. Yes.
I guess to me, it looks like you're looking at corn in a vacuum. In my mind, how would you suggest a producer bring the other data into it? Because it's possible to have to be losing money on corn, but still have it be your best viable alternative.
Well, that's right. I am looking at corn as if that was the only decision that grower was going to make. And corn may have other value besides just the return on that single crop. It may be a value in both the rotation, may have a value in weed control for cotton farmers, particularly in areas where we've got Roundup resistant Palmer amaranth. So there's other values. Those would need to be quantified, and I think they could be added then when we talk about the income from that crop. We're just talking about price times yield, but we could add those as intrinsic values into that income side of this and look at how that changes that distribution as we consider yields across the years.
Other questions? Ronnie, did your net return that you showed on the x-axis, I understand that would include yield and corn price, did it also include all the other expenses like fertilizer?
It included fertilizer, seed expenses, herbicide, machinery, basically, and cost of borrowing money, basically a complete range of variable expenses. In addition, it included the fixed cost of owning that machinery, the depreciation cost, if you will, of owning the machinery. The thing that it did not include is land cost. I did not include land cost in this analysis here because of the variation in the type of land ownership we see in the state. Some growers are mostly renters, others own all of their land, so there's some variation in what land costs are. I did not include that. That certainly would need to be, a grower would need to take that into account.
Other questions for Ron?
Let's break into discussion mode then, and do you have questions for either Larry or Peter?
Or any of the previous presentations today? Kent.
Well, we looked at it in Montana. Applying nitrogen variable rate based on color is not at a time limit where the crop is always expressing nitrogen deficiency, so how do you deal with that?
Can anybody else address that question? We'll have to pin down Peter.
It's been a similar struggle in Kansas, especially the northern part of Kansas and into Nebraska.
It seems like a great idea.
And I had a question for Larry, but he's gone too, so. Well, if nothing else, I would like to thank A4 and Kurt Thompson for asking me to preside today, and also Kurt for putting together this excellent symposium. Thank you.